Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, January 8th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, the port strike in the Pacific Northwest is creating uncertainty in corn and soybean country, and at least one U.S. senator is calling for the Obama administration to become more involved. We'll have that in other stories. Also, Todd Gleason reports that the clock is ticking for landowners needing to make decisions under the new farm bill. And we'll have the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's go ahead and see how futures settled on this Thursday afternoon. Hard red winter March wheat, 607 and three quarters, down 12 and a quarter. Soft March wheat, 567, down 12 and a half. March corn, 391 and a quarter, settled down 2. May, 402 and three quarters, down 2. July, 409 and a half, down 2. December, 417 and a quarter, down 3. January soybean settled at 1045, down 7 and three quarters. March, 1048 and a quarter, down 8. May, 1053 and three quarters, down 7 and three quarters. November, 1017, down 8. January soybean meal, 361.30, down 7.20. January soybean oil, 33.58, up 60 cents. February live cattle, these are last trades now, 162.90. It's locked limit down, down $3. January feeders, 224.70, down 95. And February lean hogs are 78.37.5, and they are down 95. And those are the settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Support comes from Country Financial, hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates on both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill, as well as how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says colder air will return Friday and highs will be in the single digits in teens most often, with negative single digits in northern and some central parts of the western Corn Belt and lower to middle 20s from far southeastern Missouri to portions of Kentucky. Warming will begin in the western Corn Belt Saturday, and by Sunday and Monday, highs in the Midwest will be in the teens to the middle 30s, with some single digits in the Northwest and some upper 30s to the middle 40s near and south of the Ohio River. A few northwestern locations will see highs in the negative single digits Sunday. Warming will continue Tuesday and Wednesday, and by next Thursday, highs will be in the 20s to the lower 40s, with a few middle 40s in the south. Low temperatures Friday in the western Corn Belt will be in the negative teens and negative single digits north, and will be in the positive single digits with some teens in the south. Lows in the eastern Corn Belt will be in the single digits and teens, with a few negative single digits in the west.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Joining us on the telephone to talk about the markets is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises. He is in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, the market ended the day today pretty much in red after chopping around quite a bit this morning. Do we read much into this?
Well, the corn chart's turning a little negative. I don't know if it's quite ready to throw in the towel, but I do know that some of the technical systems have went short. We closed down against the 50-day moving average, and that's kind of a key point in here. I think a lot of it is we had a pretty good down day there yesterday. That was, I think, some long liquidation, some index fund rebalancing, and just basically positioning, I think, for this Monday report, which usually final production numbers combined with quarterly grain stocks, it would be rare if we want to have some kind of surprise, and that surprise could probably go either way right in here.
Well, you've been watching the markets for a long time. You've been watching those technicals for years, 30 years plus. Given everything you know, what is the most likely scenario for corn on Monday?
Well, trade wants to be bearish for the most part. They haven't been successful with it basically during the October, November, December time frame. But they have had some success here over the past week or since the start of the new year. And I think what a lot of people are thinking is that, especially in corn, with a stronger dollar, it's going to be very difficult to attain USDA's export projection. And then, of course, this morning's sales didn't do any good, only sold 15 million bushels of corn. And I think a lot of people kind of feel that last year's feed and residual number for the last a year ago's quarter was probably overstated simply because it was probably filling the pipeline. So there is a group out there that are looking for some bearish numbers coming out of the report. I can argue it both ways. Some of the modeling that I look at on yield implies that maybe USDA is still too high on yield. And then, of course, there's that big unknown yet on what USDA may or may not do with acres. But at least for the time being here, the trade looks to me like they're bracing for some bearishness in here.
And quarterly grain stocks report can be a big surprise as well.
Yeah, and that's probably going to be the one that is where the big surprises are at, whether it's going to be bullish or bearish. At the moment, I think, you know, the supply-demand type people that are looking at balance sheets want to feel that USDA is going to issue a bearish report, simply because we do have we did have a big crop in here. It's questionable how big it is, and that's what tomorrow's report or Monday's report is going to tell us, is, you know, how big BIC was and how we got there.
Let's turn our attention then to soybeans, which, despite being down today in the March 8, generally speaking, are in the upper half of its range, the trading range that it's been trading in for the last month plus. Do you think that we will break out of that range one way or another on report day?
The market looks like it wants to make a run to the upside. When you look at the Central Illinois cash chart, we've been bouncing against this 1040 price level for several times here over the past couple months. Now, we did close lower today, so we're not going to punch that out today. But I think the underlying demand scenario for soybeans is a lot stronger than what's on the balance sheets. And then right at the moment anyway, the weather conditions in South America aren't going as well as the big crop guys would like to see it. We've got too much rain in some areas, not enough rain in other areas. So I think there's some concern that maybe that South American crop may not be quite as big as what the trade has penciled in. And we'll have to see how that plays out yet over the next, several weeks or not. But the bean market, at least technically, seems to be in a little stronger footing, I think, than the corn market, at least at this point in time.
Of course, post-report, the volatility will settle down considerable, and at that point we will be certainly looking at demand side and seeing how much the disappearance goes in the second quarter forward. But then we also have to look at the U.S. dollar in that mix, and the dollar has been on a tear.
Well, I think that also has that's been kind of casting a bearish net on agricultural commodities. Agricultural commodities, at least for the month of December, kind of shook off that stronger dollar. But now, since it's right up against this 2005 high and looking like it wants to punch that out, I think that bearishness that we've seen in the other commodity complex, whether or not it's the energies, whether or not it's the precious metals, now seems to be kind of catching and putting a bearish blanket here over the agricultural commodities, at least for right now.
What else before we let you go that we need to know today?
That's about it. Just keep your fingers crossed for Monday. I've been through these January reports several times, and whether or not USDA's numbers are correct or not, they are what they are, and the market will trade them until they see something different. So we'll have to just see what USDA comes out with. There's a lot of moving parts in these reports, and we'll just have to brace ourselves for whatever USDA wants to give us.
Thank you much, Dan.
Farewell.
Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and he is in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
In agricultural news, the effects of the West Coast port labor dispute already may be rippling east to farm country, prompting an Iowa senator to seek relief from the situation. Iowa Senator Charles Grassley told reporters yesterday that he'll ask the Obama administration to help end the dispute after Grassley said he received word that at least some railroad companies operating in Iowa already have stopped accepting at least some shipments to West Coast ports. Rail companies have indicated they are hesitant to send some containers west because of ongoing shipping delays. Negotiations have stalled on a new contract between employers at 29 West Coast ports and a union that represents 20,000 workers. The talks started last May, and both sides agreed to keep talking even after current contracts expired June 30th. But there has been little movement since last year. An analysis from the Environmental Protection Agency says biomass sorghum could qualify as a cellulosic biofuels feedstock under the renewable fuel standard. EPA opened a 30-day public comment period on the analysis December 31st. The EPA analysis said the greenhouse gas emissions profile of sorghum is virtually the same as switchgrass. In the latest analysis, EPA looks at sweet sorghum, forage sorghum, and at efforts to breed new sorghum for increasing biomass content. EPA says biomass sorghum production is expected to be concentrated in Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas, as well as in Missouri and Arkansas. EPA said it believes there is land adequate enough to grow biomass sorghum for biofuels. World food prices fell in December due to ample stocks of various edible commodities and falling oil prices. The UN's World Food Price Index averaged 188.6 points, a drop of 1.7% since November, led by lower sugar and palm oil. The FAO Monthly Food Price Index measures the change in price of a basket of food commodities and is a leading indicator for food inflation. Inflation rates across the world's largest economies eased for the sixth straight month in November as energy prices fell sharply. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development today says that the annual rate for inflation in its 34 members was 1.5% in November, down from 1.7% in October. Among the group of 20 leading developed and developing economies, it fell to 2.3% from 2.5%. The G20 accounts for 90% of global economic activity. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The time has come for landowners and farm operators to begin making decisions related to programs under the new Farm Bill. Todd Gleason reports a landowner is responsible for the first decision in the process.
It is the landowner that must make, unless power of attorney has been put in place, the first in a series of three decisions related to commodity crop programs under the new Farm Bill. This is a decision related to commodities like corn, soybean, and wheat. University of Illinois ag economist Gary Schnittke says it's up to the landowner to decide how base acres will be allocated. Landowners will get letters in the mail related to each of the decisions. The first letter, related to the program crops, yields, and subject of this story, base acres, should have been received way back last August.
So they got that letter, and that had one base acre allocation in it, and they can keep that, or they can update it to the other one, which is based on their average plantings from 2009 to 12.
The August letter from the Farm Service Agency detailed the current allocation of base acres by FSA farm number. It simply wanted the landowner to confirm those figures were correct. Today, the landowner needs to consider whether that mix of acres is or is not the mix to be used going forward.
And so they can keep that current base acres, or they can update it. And they can update it to the proportion of plantings from 2009 through 12. And those plantings were given also in that 2014 letter. So both sets of information are given in that letter.
Well, here's how Gary Schnittke thinks about that decision.
From my standpoint, the decision is fairly simple. You look at the two allocations. They're going to have the same total base acres in it. The allocation won't change the total base acres, but it will change which crops have the most acres. And I would tend to choose the allocation with the most corn acres in it. So if it's a choice between an allocation with 75% acres in corn, 25% acres in soybean versus a 50-50, I would choose the one with the most corn acres.
Again, Schnittke believes it best to choose the allocation with the most corn base. This is simple enough if the farm is in a two-commodity rotation, corn and soybean. However, adding wheat base to the mix, if it's still in the current crop rotation, can complicate the matter a little.
So if you have wheat near base, and this would be probably more of a southern Illinois situation, what we would expect, and these acre allocation decisions impact what PLC, what acres they will pay on in the future, Arkin County and PLC. The way it looks is corn will pay the most, wheat the second, followed by soybeans.
Here then is the standard base acre allocation rule of thumb. Choose the base with the most corn acres and the least soybean acres. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing. He's over in cold and brisk Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dave.
All I can say is brr.
A little chilly.
The markets were a little bit chilly today on the downside. Talked with Dan a little bit earlier. He wants to make the case that maybe we need to keep a close eye on whether or not the corn market might break on Monday. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, to me, there's been a fair amount of bullish sentiment in the last several weeks, and I think that there's been a general trend of everyone just assuming that acreage was going to be lower based upon the FSA data. But, you know, there are some whispers out there, of some underreporting possible, and I think there's several guys that are in that camp. So, you know, acreage is a real wild card for Monday, and if we would come out with some sort of a bearish surprise when everyone's kind of leaning bullish, I think it could be pretty rough. And on the other side of that, I think we'll need a fairly bullish report to get a bullish reaction. That's just my opinion.
Well, let's take us through the report that is most important to the cash grain folk, and that would be a quarterly grain stock report. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think when you're looking at the quarterly grain stocks, usage has been pretty darn good. You know, I mean, the average guess, you know, just over 11 billion bushels. And I think, you know, the range there is actually about a half a billion bushels. So, you know, 10.8 up to 11.3. I mean, that's a pretty big range. And obviously, if you come resting right in the middle there, it's probably going to be a decent situation. Anything under that, I think, would be significantly bullish. And a lot of it's going to depend upon, another thing is what are exports going to come in? Are they going to go ahead and bump those up a little bit? Are they going to keep ethanol the same? Obviously, the ethanol industry's got some challenges maybe ahead of it due to crude oil and corn price ratio. And so, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting on Monday.
I think traders may be in for a little bit of a shock to learn who owns the corn.
It's very possible. You know, I think that right now a lot of people are kind of leaning one way, but I do think that this time of year it's pretty tough to get super bullish, especially in the face of the biggest crop we've ever raised. And, you know, I was all for corn rallying at some point. I definitely didn't get the timing exactly right. That would have been about impossible to do. But looking forward for me out into 15, I think that there's some good things about the corn market. But as far as the cash corn market goes, you have to understand with huge supply, it's a pretty tough road to hoe to get any sort of a big rally here.
How about a quick word about soybeans, please?
Well, I think with soybeans, it's a little different. I'm probably a little less friendly long-term to beans and probably not too friendly short-term as well. I do think demand's excellent, but the Monday report's probably going to give us a lot of indication. I think it'll be interesting to see how they look at the South American crop and then total demand.
All right, then why don't we go ahead and get prices there at total grain today?
Yep, the prices they've got posted today would be 370 cash corn and 377 for next fall, 1037 for cash beans and 975 for next fall.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you, Dave.
That is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois. Have you had a chance to try this website yet? It's willag.org. We just went through a major overhaul of the site. It is much more user-friendly than it has ever been. You can also subscribe to our free Aggie newsletter in the right navigation window. That's at willag.org. I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather. It's National English Toffee Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1800, the first soup kitchens in London were opened to serve the poor. In 1823, Alfred Wallace was born. Wallace was a British naturalist who developed a theory of natural selection independently of Charles Darwin. In 1825, Eli Whitney died. Inventor of the cotton gin, he also developed the concept of mass-producing interchangeable parts. Whitney introduced the idea into the manufacture of muskets for the U.S. government. In 1956, Greenleaf Picker died. a U.S. electrical engineer, his invention of the crystal detector was one of the first devices widely used for receiving radio broadcasts. In 1997, Melvin Calvin died, an American biochemist. He was one of a team that used carbon-14 isotopes as a tracer to map the complete route that carbon travels through a plant during photosynthesis, starting with the absorption of atmospheric carbon dioxide to its conversion into carbohydrates and other organic compounds. The Calvin group showed that sunlight acts on the chlorophyll in a plant to fuel the manufacturing of organic compounds rather than on carbon dioxide, as was previously believed. And in 1998, Walter E. Dimer died, an American businessman. He accidentally invented bubble gum in 1928 while experimenting with recipes for a chewing gum base. By the way, the very first batch was pink, the color that remains to this day. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support for Agricultural Weather comes from Busey. Busey and its associates remain committed to lending a helping hand, with contributions of more than $1 million and countless volunteer hours each year to better the communities where we live and work. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, for the longest time, it has seemed as if weather conditions, growing conditions in South America have been close to ideal. But maybe in recent days, a couple of hiccups have emerged?
Really, since about Christmas time, things have changed a little bit down there. If you take a look at Center West and Southeast Brazil, which do account for a significant proportion of first crop corn and total soybean production, there's been very little rainfall since then. That's about a two-week period, and since that area averages so much rain, we're starting to see some pretty big departures from average. A lot of that region has been 3.5 to 5.5 inches drier than usual over the last 2 weeks, which basically indicates that little to no rainfall has occurred. That in itself is not a huge issue since it's been so wet leading into that period, but the real problem going forward, or potential problem, is that we don't see a big change on the way. There's a large area of upper-level high pressure centered near the region, and that will continue to suppress rainfall over the next 7 to 10 days, while also leading to above-average temperatures. Maximums across much of this region will reach the mid-90s, which is a little bit warm for them. Since they have so much rain, they have a lot of cloudiness in their climate, and that keeps daytime temperatures generally in the mid to upper 80s at this time of the year. So we're essentially looking at a warm and dry pattern for a big chunk of corn and soybeans in Brazil.
So that takes care of Brazil. What about in Argentina? I'm hearing it's a little bit on the wet side.
Well, that's the interesting thing. The exact same weather pattern that is causing all of the warm and dry weather across center west and southeast Brazil is also allowing a number of storm systems to move across the same area off to the south. That's leading to pockets of excessive wetness in parts of Argentina and into south Brazil. In that area, over the last 30 days, rainfall departures of more than 3 to 6 inches wetter than usual exist. And we're looking for similar types of weather over the next 10 days. So you can easily make an argument that too much rain is coming up for corn and soybeans in a decent-sized area of Argentina and southern Brazil. So no matter how you look at this, you really want things to change where the drier areas turn wet and the wetter areas turn dry. But for the next 10 days, we have some confidence that this pattern is not going to change dramatically.
All right, let's turn our attention then closer to home, where we have been under siege by cold temperatures of late.
Yes, we have been seeing some very cold temperatures, not quite as cold as last winter, but definitely paralleling that. As we go forward, though, changes occur from this weekend into next week. The Arctic air mass retreats, temperatures warm back to more seasonable levels with highs in the 20s and 30s, as opposed to the single digits above zero. So this coldness that we have now is not going to last, and we do look for milder times ahead.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you, Dave.
Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.